Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Arcade Cozy, the coziest game room on the internet. My name is Chris.
My name is Corey.
And we're coming back at you again, everybody.
Return.
Yeah, I don't know what I was going to say. I do want to say, before I forget this, because I've forgotten it for weeks, I do want to apologize to Corey. I know I've brought this up to you, but if you have noticed podcasts being delayed or stuff popping up in feeds like, oh, it's the episode, the new episode's over here, but it's not over here right now. What's this going on? There was one instance where like 2 weeks popped up on like Apple Podcast at the same time, you know, we're aware of that. I'm aware of that, seeing as how I typically am the one kind of like heading up some of the hosting requirements there. We host through Anchor, or did yep. host through Anchor, and then Anchor's been owned by Spotify for years, and Spotify rebranded Anchor, and yep. it messed with some of the distribution. So then there were some issues, and I was having to refresh some of those things. So yeah. just so you're aware, we know we're, you know, nobody's
working on it.
Nobody's mentioned it, but just if you have those issues, just know it's being gradually, hopefully, kind of ironed out as I guess their servers and their hosting platform kind of levels. So yeah, but I just realize every time we'll get to the end of the episode and I'll be like, man, I didn't mention it. And then I just forgot again. So I figured I'd bring it up now. Corey, how are you doing?
Doing okay. Got some bad news on my knee. Torn ACL. Sprained MCL, some cartilage damage. All the other, not good. So I'm getting surgery on that next week. So any well wishes or well thoughts, much appreciated.
Could you explain what a torn ACL is to me as if I was 5 years old?
Sure. The knee is poorly made, and so you have four crucial ligaments. You have your ACL, which is the one in the center of your knee, of like front center. You have your PCL that's behind it, your LCL that's on the inside of your knee, and your MCL that's on the outside of the knee, I believe. I might have this backwards. But those ligaments are what allow you to do a lot of weight bearing on your knees, allow you to bend your knee, like full 90 degree motions. They allow for explosiveness, like being able to like drive like your knee forward, left to right movements, like quick stopping as well. Like, so right now I can't go down the stairs with the knee. I have to go down with it like straight legged. I can't bend it. Otherwise it hurts a whole lot. And also it just won't bend that far.
So I didn't realize, I just seeing diagrams of a torn ACL, like I didn't realize it was like inside the knee.
Yeah, like, it's just inside the knee.
Right in there.
Yeah. So I won't get descriptive terrible. On this is my second ACL tear, and will be my second surgery. I tore my other one years ago in college.
Yeah.
So I've watched videos. I know how they do it. I won't go into detail of it because it's really disgusting. So if you're curious and you have the stomach for it, go watch it because it looks really cool. I watched it to see, like, okay, what are they going to do to my knee? And then I watched it, I'm like, I wish I wouldn't have watched it, but I guess it wasn't that bad.
Yeah,
it's still pretty gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, only do if you have like a strong stomach, I would say.
Okay. Yeah, I would say that about like any surgery procedure.
Yeah.
even like a Grey's Anatomy or something where they like get a little too happy with some of like showing some of the procedure.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, man, it very much proves to me that like being a doctor was not my calling, because I look at it and I'm like, yeah, I just can't. We're I'm out at this point.
See, I can watch some of that stuff. Some of it's a little too much for me. But yeah, I watched the whole like knee thing. I'm like, I just want to know what you're going to do. Yeah. And the whole time, I'm like, you're going to do that?
Yeah.
And it goes back? And yeah, it's weird.
It's fun. But it sounds like to me, Corey, you're going to be out for a little while, which means video games?
So many video games. I will be
sick days for days.
Well, the first day I'll probably be just out of it, yeah. High as a kite off pain meds.
Yeah.
But I talked with my surgeon because I've done this before. He wants me like back up and like going pretty quickly. So I'll be out for a bit in terms of, you know, my like actual work. But
yeah,
I'm hoping after like a day or so, I'll be cognitive enough to game.
Look at you.
Yeah. So my Zelda plan's coming to fruition.
Yeah. You need that.
This is my plan all along. I win.
Thank you, strange man who kicked me in the knee. He's joke's written. On you now. Maybe
he's the worst.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, Corey, but good news for you. There's not a ton of news on the top end, but
no
good news for you. Were you aware that there's a Sonic Murder game out?
I was aware there's a Sonic Murder game out, and it's apparently the Death of Sonic.
Yeah,
or so. Sonic the Hedgehog, the Death of Sonic.
Yeah, it was like an April Fool, like quote unquote, was like, is this actually real? But it is.
Apparently it's very real and it's very good.
They just dropped it's a visual novel murder mystery game. That's description is, it's Amy Rose's birthday. She's hosting a murder mystery party on the Mirage Express, which I assume is a train. When Sonic the Hedgehog becomes the game's victim, everyone is off to get to the bottom of things. However, something feels a bit off. Is this really an innocent game or is something more sinister afoot? And it's apparently very good. Overwhelmingly positive on Steam. 11,000 user reviews.
Everyone is shocked by how good it is. I want to play it so bad. I will be playing it in the near future.
But I want to check it out. I love the art style. I mean, it's Sonic, but it has like a very kind of like comic book halftone texture to it and stuff, and just looks great. I love the energy here. Corey, not a ton's going on. I mean, I think the big thing, Mario movie comes out this week.
Yes.
At the time of this being published, not only will the Mario movie be in wide release, but you and I will have both seen it.
Yes, we're going tomorrow night
side by side.
It'll be so nice. I'm excited for our usual routine. We're going to go get Chipotle, probably not going to get Starbucks because it's going to be very late at night. Not very late, but it'll be like 6 or 7. I can't have coffee that late nowadays. Oh, it's good. But yeah, I'm pumped to see it. I've seen the reviews for it aren't great, but I've also seen plenty of people being like, this is great fun. Like, don't worry about what people are saying about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, I think it comes down to expectations. Like, we'll unpack it. Little does Corey know, after the movie, I'm gonna record him and I'm gonna be like, Corey, what did you think about that movie? Nobody tell him beforehand,
right?
But it's. We have no perspective currently. There's nothing we can really go off of. But it's like, that is kind of the thing that seems like is the case, is like people who go in expecting like this is going to be some revelatory, like best piece of storytelling ever, they're somewhat disappointed. And they're going into it with this like high, like prestige expectation, whereas like the people who are going in and they're expecting like a kids movie, somewhat like something that's nostalgic, something that's fun, they're having a good time with it. And could be wrong, I don't know, but that seems to kind of be the demarcation, is the people who were going to have fun are having fun, and the people who are going to like have like a maybe a Pixar level kind of experience where it's like hitting you in all of these very deep emotional ways, like maybe not so much. But then at the same time, like, did we expect anything differently? Because what Mario game has ever had a story has done anything really other than stuff like Paper Mario and things like that are designed to, but I'm just going in expecting like, this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to seeing some like callbacks, some Easter eggs. I want to see like, me being a diehard Mario Karter, I'm looking to see some builds. I'm looking to see who's going to be wrecking somebody else. That's what I'm going for. So
I love it. Yeah. No, I'm in this for just the fun of the movie. I don't need to see Mario and co on the next grand like storytelling adventure. And you know, this is Nintendo's kind of is it their first kind of their first foray into the like movie market, and so rarely is your first one your best one, and I'm just looking forward to the fun of it and seeing you and hanging out.
It'll be
my big thing.
It will be lovely. I'm trying to look up Nintendo movie adaptations. Did you know there is a there's an Animal Crossing movie came out in 2006?
Did not know that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There is Detective Pikachu that also exists.
True.
We did forget Good about call. That. Which I wonder how much of that was.
But that's Nintendo. Also like an established like thing. That's also the big Pokemon's very established as, you know, it has. A long-running show, which is also now over, by the way. Ash's story is officially over. The final episode was released. Very heart-touching, tear-jerker. But they've done tons of movies like with Pokemon. So Detective Pikachu is its like own standalone thing, but it's not really out of the realm of what's been done before.
Yeah.
Just kind of a step up more than anything.
Yeah, I'm excited just to see. I like Illumination Studios. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do Minions. They do that new Grinch movie was them.
Yeah.
So they do some neat stuff. I like them. I'm excited. I haven't watched it yet, but on Apple TV Plus, there's also a Tetris movie.
I want to see it. It looks really good
as well. So, Walk, Don't Run. Go see it.
I'll probably be watching that next week. So,
look at you. So, games, Corey. You've been playing games.
Well, before we dive in, I do have a question. I don't know if you've seen it. There are heavy rumors right now of a new PlayStation Portable.
I don't know if you've seen anything.
Just want to get your thoughts on the idea of PlayStation attempting to revive the Vita/Portable.
So you tell me. I'm going to look and see if I can find, because I have seen like a headline, but I haven't read anything. Mm-hmm. So you tell me if there are any specifics. I'll try to see if I can look up something while you're talking.
Honestly, the big thing I've seen with it is it's going to just connect to your PlayStation account. Kind of what we were talking about before. Was it last week or 2 weeks ago where it was like, okay, yeah, you can have your accounts, you can download games. But yeah, it's pretty much you'll just be able to AirPlay. Is that the right word for it?
They have, or I can't remember what their, I can't remember what their like
term but essentially you'll be able to play all your games just on this handheld device, download games. So it's going to be just essentially a handheld device. And it feels like PlayStation is seeing I guess, the trend of people being very interested in handheld gaming still. There's, you know, there was a lot of hubbub with the death of the 3DS store. People love the Steam Deck and its mobility. So I think this is PlayStation being like, maybe we were just like a decade too soon with the Vita and like portable and all that. Maybe it's this time around. And it might be. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's hard to tell. Like the Vita, I own a Vita because of Persona 4 Golden. That was the entire reason that I bought it. Now, granted, there were a number of like PS Plus games and things like that that also had Vita versions that I did play a little bit of. So like Spelunky or Pixel Junk Shooters or, you know, stuff like that, which did very well. Like, but I never played, you know, I never played Tearaway on the Vita. I never played Gravity Rush on the Vita. I have them on my on PS4, you know, because once they ended up porting those things over. And I think that that's the core kind of thing of it is like, I think if they were to do it, it would have to have a more seamless integration in the way that something like a Switch or something does, where it isn't its own dedicated. Because I think that that's like thinking of myself, one of the things that's always taken me out of the handheld experience specifically from Sony is that like I don't necessarily want to exclusively play these like big budget AAA titles on a Vita. So like an Uncharted specifically on Vita, a Resistance specifically on Vita. Like those games were never like I would always be like at best kind of tepid about any of those because like I didn't necessarily want that experience. I wanted my handheld experience to be more handheld. That being said, the Switch, you know, introduced us to the fact that it's like, okay, the idea that you can swap back and forth between the two, that you're not limited by one area, that's the sweet spot. That's what people really enjoy. And truth be told, like, yeah, I mean, there are plenty of times that I will buy a game on Switch over a PlayStation or something like that just for that opportunity because I know this game's going to have some grind to it. This game's going to like this game. I know I'm probably going to spend a little bit of time, if nothing else, like playing this while watching something. So I need to have that option. So I think if they could make it a more seamless experience, then yeah, I'm all for it. I'm all for them like translating some of that over. It's just whether or not that's what they have in mind or if they're even able to do that. Because again, too, like I've used that a little bit. Like I've used their streaming app a little bit on my like PS4 or PS5. Like whenever Ni No Kuni, whenever I was going for the platinum, there was like grinding stuff where it was like, I have to find like, I have to kill a bunch of this one thing to get this one material item to make this other thing. So I'm grinding and we would be watching something and it's like, I don't want to stare at a TV for hours while I'm doing this.
Yeah.
So I would stream it over to my iPad and I would like, we'd be watching something, but it would be such a precarious setup because like my PlayStation has to also be on and then I have this iPad and then it's like, you know, it's, there's so many moving parts to that where if I just had this one thing that I could like seamlessly just transfer over, that would be nice. So yeah, long and the short of it. Nice. Could be cool. Just, you know, done the right way.
Yeah. There's been so much talk with like cloud gaming, like coming down from Xbox and like this idea of it, that I could see them jumping on this, like, okay, we're gonna have a portable console essentially where you can, as long as your save data is like on like our cloud, like if you have your game downloaded that you own, you can just pick up your save like on the go with it. And then whenever you're done, you save. And then the next time you want to play, it's on the screen. I think if they have something along those lines, it could be very successful. Question is just, do they do it? Because I think you're right. If they go into, this is an exclusive Uncharted game for our new Vita, I think you're going to lose a lot of people with that.
Interesting.
It's cool. Yeah.
It looks like they're, at least the rumors of it seem to kind of be in the place of it probably, if it does exist, being a streaming device, maybe potentially to be like a, specifically to stream things like the PlayStation Plus catalog and library and things like that. Which again, like, could be cool, could be a cool option. It just kind of, you know, remains to be seen. So who knows? I mean, at the same time, I mean, Nintendo, who knows what Nintendo's doing next? I mean, they have like, I mean, I don't know that they could pivot from the Switch, but
it's too big. It's too successful.
Yeah. Where do you go from there? So it's definitely going to be, I think, whatever the next, you know, everybody, whether it's with the Steam Deck or, you know, people are realizing that market. So whatever comes next to kind of like move that forward is going to be interesting. And we may not even be able to anticipate it. Because if you had asked me, hey, Nintendo's going to come out with a console that you can literally just plop onto a thing and it like goes TV, this thing, TV, this thing. Never would have believed you. But then it happened. Yeah. So
I could see Nintendo keeping like their Switch line going and then doing a separate like handheld line again.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I could really see Nintendo like doing. And I could like realistically, I think they would like divide it up because they have always just been known as like being a handheld company or device. So
I think they would. I mean, it's a weird thing, but I mean, there are still people that I hear from who like their first non-handheld console was the Switch. Like they only ever played handheld. They had never played a video game on a TV screen until the Switch. And so, I mean, I think like, I think it would be a shame for them to not continue integrating that into the future, but
same.
What that looks like, who knows?
We'll find out.
Yeah. Relatedly, Corey, Forspoken has some DLC coming out. Get hype.
I mean, I want to play Forspoken. I will play Forspoken this year. I might play it here in the next couple weeks because, again, I'll be off for quite a bit. I'm waiting for it to be on a really good sale, though.
Yeah.
Or just be free, please. But I mean, I've seen there's plenty of people who really enjoyed the game. I've seen there's plenty of people who are just like, it's your typical run-of-the-mill triple A action open-world game. But the fact that they have DLC plan makes me think, okay, this is something Square is like really wanting to succeed. We already like Horizon Burning Shores is just now getting its DLC this month, over a year later, kind of a thing. And that DLC, I guarantee, was planned. But the fact that Forspoken's already releasing some story DLCs makes me think, okay, they are really hoping for this to succeed and they have a plan for it. And I expect we'll see more than just this one story DLC for it.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a hard thing to tell because, you know, on the flip side, the Deus Ex games all had DLC. And I mean, they like were very niche and that never really kind of elevated them outside of that. It may just be that they're kind of like trying to keep the brand relevant in the hopes that they can like expand the universe, but
maybe.
Yeah. Forspoken in Tanta?
Mm-hmm.
Tanta We Trust comes out in May. So
yeah.
Look forward to it, everybody. It's gonna be exciting. Corey. You have been playing the last few Deep Dark Nights. Scary game that I want you to tell me about.
I wouldn't say Deep Dark Nights, more of nice, bright, shiny afternoons. But I have been playing Resident Evil 4. Resident Evil 4 Remake. Picked it up just because there's been so much overwhelming praise, so much overwhelming, just like universal, like this is legitimately like the best game that's come out this year, one of the best games that's come out in years. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm buying into the hype. So picked it up. I can safely say the hype is lived up. What a game this is. I'm on chapter 8 now. It feels firmly the halfway mark of the game. You played it when it originally came out.
No, I played the original 2 years ago
for the 2 years time. Not that when it came out, but like you've played it before. Sorry.
Yes. I played the original before.
I am in the castle. Trying not to give it away too much. I did the whole sequence, like this huge, huge fight sequence, and made it into the courtyard.
Okay. So have you met the conquistador?
Yes.
Child?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Met him. Yeah, he did his little like weird thing. Okay. I'll text you or talk to you tomorrow about where I'm at it. But I feel like I'm about the halfway mark. But Chris, I love this game. It's so good. It isn't as creepy and scary as I thought it would be.
Yeah.
I've watched a fair bit of gameplay, and I've watched a fair bit of gameplay of like 2 and 7, which are, I would say, far more into the horror. Those are full horror games. Just in my opinion, while 4 right now feels very survival horror at the beginning. I mean, this is what everyone says, so this isn't like new information, but survivor horror adjacent at the beginning, and it's kind of a full-blown action game at this point. But yeah, so Resident Evil 4, you play as the titular hero, Leon S. Kennedy. Very famous in video game lore. Who wins, John Wick or Leon Kennedy? Christ, just right now.
I would think John Wick.
I don't know, man. Leon Kennedy is so far through my like 6-hour playthrough has not been fazed by anything. And angry mob of villagers trying to kill me. Yep, whatever. Just another day in my life. This giant, like, yep, nope, casual. I'll take him down. Ain't no worries. This weird man who turns into, like, this giant spider. Yeah, casual. Hasta luego, baby. never phased. You name it. He's like, really? Really? He often gives the vibe of, I'm getting too old for this.
Yeah. Meanwhile,
He's all of 27. He is deeply traumatized as the game opens up and it's just like, everything changed when that night. Basically hinting to the events of Resident Evil 2, which you have now played as well.
Yeah. Well, not even hinting. I mean, like a number of these scenes.
It shows a lot of it.
It shows, which is like a big. I mean, that is it's not like I'm super familiar with the original Resident Evil 4, but like the original Resident Evil 4 doesn't show any reference to Leon's backstory. It doesn't it doesn't tell you, other than the fact that like, oh, he was a cop in Raccoon City once. Like,
yeah,
that's it. It doesn't show or explain anything. And so like the fact that it shows like actual cutscenes where it's like, oh, here's Claire. Here's Ada. Here's like Mr. X, Tyrant. Like here are these other characters that you would have seen in Resident Evil 2, like from this experience, you're seeing that transfer over. Plus, it shows like, it even shows stuff afterward where it's like, then I was in the army. Here's me in the army, like getting yoked. Like, yep. I mean, he's, and I think that's the thing of it is like, at the end of the day, Leon's kind of just a big, like, doofus man, but he's just gone through some stuff. So he has to, like, he has to cope with the fact that he's going through a lot of stuff. So he has to play it off or he's going to go insane.
Yeah. And so I think that leads me into the kind of the best part of the game is that Leon as the character is very, like, he knows he's the game's very cheesy and very corny at times, which, like, it does very well. It doesn't feel cringy, I guess is the word for it.
Yeah.
Like, he is very aware of, like, oh, I am the action hero of this sequence. And it's the beginning of the game, like, you take down this whole village. And I think I talked about it a little bit last week, or maybe I didn't. I don't know. I've talked about this a lot. But it's just like, yeah, you survive like this onslaught of people immediately attempting to just murder you. And then as soon as they all like leave after these church bells goes off, he's like, where did everybody go? Bingo. And it's just like his, throughout the game, he is making snide comments, little quips, like these kind of little jokes to himself. And it really does feel like it is to keep him like sane, to keep himself like, you know, just another day. Meanwhile, like this entire like cult is hell bent on killing him around every corner. And it's like everything that could go wrong keeps going wrong for you so far in the game. And he's just rolling with the punches. It's, you find the character you're searching for. The president's daughter, her name's Ashley. You finally find her and, it doesn't go super well. And he immediately goes, well, that didn't go well. And I'm just like, he is just narrating me as a player, just my dialogue.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the point as well too, but it's so perfectly balanced between like these incredibly self-aware but cheesy one-liners and like the intense like survival horror of it at the same time, which for me, it's not as bad because I currently am playing the game on assisted mode, which is the easiest mode. I see no shame in that. Makes it like very easy to manage the mobs that essentially come after you in these like open level designs. And I think that has worked for me really well instead of playing on standard or hardcore where I know enemies can be extremely difficult to take down or just require immense amount of resources that you don't really have. And the mode I'm playing in, I have lots of resources. They go down a lot quicker and it's made it much more accessible for me to be like, okay, I can stomach 30 to 40 seconds of like an intense mob rush towards me. And like, I can survive that and like, it's over and I can move on to the next area, do the next puzzle, cutscene, whatever you, is next. And most of the jump scares like are told or like they come out and it's not really a jump scare. They come out earlier. You have more time to react, so on and so forth. Than I imagine what's really intended, for remake, but altogether, I'm loving this game. It's my game of the year right now. I'm just having so much fun. I'm excited to see where the story goes. There is a story, but there isn't a story, if that makes sense. You're kind of just thrown into the midst of, if he's here, he's going to find the president's daughter. This whole village is trying to kill him. All right, I'm trying to work my way through. You run into a Mr. X type kind of a guy. You wake up and you're like, okay, where am I at? Okay. Yeah. Nope. Still looking for her. And it's just like, you just plodding along through this like old Spanish town.
Yeah.
And there's clearly a lot of moving parts that are happening. And there's other characters in, I believe Ada, who you referenced in RE2. I've seen her. There's a guy named like Louis Serra, who's very shady, who's hanging around as well. It feels like Leon was kind of dropped in on this and is just like doing Leon Kennedy things and is ruining everyone else's plan. And he's just kind of like, I am just trying to do my job and make it out of here alive. Can people please stop trying to kill me? That is the whole vibe of the game. And yeah, I love it. It's so good. Combat's really good. I feel like the weapon tree upgrades and like how that goes around. The vendor. I haven't even talked about the vendor yet. Hello, stranger. Smells like you just getting done with a bit of battle, haven't you? Hey, well, how about you come and upgrade this gun to make it a little bit easier next time? And it's just...
Look at you.
So good.
Like a deep, deep Texan. I love it.
I'm trying to think, who does he, every time I hear him, I'm like, you sound like somebody. He sounds like Billy Butcher from The Boys every time he talks.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Every time I'm just like, Billy? Is that you? Butcher?
Having said what I said at the beginning of this, I also have played a little bit of... So I got it today and have played all of 30 minutes. So you got the bingo line. Yeah, I heard the bingo line and I saw a title card. So that's about where I am. But it at least gives me a little bit of perspective as, you know, compared to the original in that. And also... In comparison to having played RE2 Remake recently as well, just in the fact that like there's polish, there's like even compared to RE2 Remake, which felt just fine and was new and fresh, like there's some polish, but it is also like it keeps a lot of the like weightiness of 4 because I mean Leon feels a lot more. Like a lot more agile in 2.
Yeah.
And he doesn't as much in 4. And I don't know there has to be kind of like a lore conceit there because like in RE2 Remake, like Claire, I think is technically faster. So they are like considering things like that. Like, oh, Claire's smaller, so she's faster. Like, is there a lore reason why Leon is like chunkier and slower as in this? Is it his training? I mean, is he just buff? is that just kind of the thinking there?
That sure. I don't know if it's too small or if he just like, he ordered a large and the large is almost like a kid's t-shirt on him.
They gave him a, well, I mean, that happened to me at my job before. There was a, when they sent me a bunch, I think I ordered like larges or something, and they sent me like a, in one of the shirts, it was like a women's large and it was like a belly shirt. So it could just be like one of those. Could have just been a mix up. They sent him a women's and he's just making it work. He's like, I didn't have time to swing by the Gap before, before I flew out of the country.
Really could have used a men's shirt. Yeah. Oh, well.
The biggest, I mean, I think one of the biggest things that I notice right out of the gate is just, that is nice, is just the fact that you can actually move while you're shooting. Like, I think that that's a very stark thing when playing the first, or when playing RE4, the original, is that, like, when you pull up your gun, you stop, and you can't move. Which is kind of terrifying whenever, especially in, like, those early sequences where you are just in a village and you're running from like 12 guys. It's like, okay, well, I need to shoot him, but also why are you just standing there? And at least in this, like, even though he is chunkier, he is slower, he can move. He can, and he's also more agile. Like, he can do his kicks, but he can also parry, and he also has a knife, and he's also he's got more stuff going on. And so, like, you know, I'm excited. I admittedly did not love RE4, the original, whenever I played it, partially because like I didn't play it whenever I was younger. Like I didn't, whenever it first came out, I didn't have the nostalgia. So I was playing it from the perspective of somebody who's playing it in the year 2021, 2022. And that wasn't, you know, that wasn't like great, but at least so far with the short bit of time that I've had, like it feels a lot fresher and it feels like it has the potential to like really allow me to like enjoy that story and enjoy that experience in a way that maybe I would have had I played the original back in 05, 06, 04, whenever it was. And that's exciting because yeah, I mean, it is a like wholly beloved game and, you know, having that opportunity to, okay, now we can actually enjoy, like we can get into this also within the continuity because like the remakes, I'm assuming the remakes are like, they're, I mean, at this point, maybe they're just going through the entire line and they're just connecting all of these things. They're retconning stuff. They're doing whatever. I don't know. Because, yeah, I mean, like, RE, it's not like they made up the scenes at the beginning of RE4. Like, they were all cutscenes from RE2 Remake. Yep. Like, it is the same Leon. It is the same. There, it isn't just like a different thing that's like sectioned out. It's the same guy. And so like, it wouldn't surprise me if they made an RE5 remake that like, and then RE6 remake that leads into, okay, big buff daddy Chris Redfield showing up in RE Village, like kind of explaining, like having that same kind of continuity go through it, which like, I don't have experience with the series, but like getting into it a little bit more kind of makes me excited just in the fact that like, they could be really retroactively going through and just linking all of that stuff together in the most like solid way, in a similar way to how Naughty Dog has done with Last of Us.
Where
it's just kind of like, nope, you got to play The Last of Us in the best possible way. And we will keep remaking the hell out of this thing until it is, everything is relevant all at once.
Well, I know 4 has been remade, or not remade, but like re-released like multiple times across like every console ever since its release. But I know they're working on, we know they're working on Resident Evil 9. And it definitely feels like the series has new life after 7, the 7 and 8. But I know 5 and 6 are extremely, I don't want to say unliked, but not well regarded. I know 5 actually, 5, and I'm aware, has a pretty big like racism issue that feels very tough to think that they would keep those issues knowing them. So I could see like 5 getting like a huge like revamp when they do that. I don't know a ton about 6 other than most people just like it's very blah.
It's like a, it's action movie-ish. Yeah. Is kind of how it is. So,
but with all that being said, I am having a greater interest in the series because this game is so good. I know it is considered the pinnacle of the series. So everything does feel like it will be downhill from here. But I'm very curious. I'm probably going to check out 8 and Village because I know it's a very similar pattern to 4 in terms of starts out a little survival horror-y and goes full action game by the end. And then might look into dipping into 7 feels just too much for me. So I might do 2. Because I know it from just your recommendation and also how short it is. It's like, okay, I'd be done with it by now. Yeah. All things considered.
You could also try 3. I mean, I haven't played 3, but 3 is supposed to be more action-y than 2. Like less of the horror, more of the like big bazookas and, you know, that kind of stuff.
I tried that.
And it takes place, I think the story like overlaps timeline wise with RE2. So I think it's like around the same period.
Gotcha. But yeah, I mean, 4, I'm yeah, I roughly think I'm about halfway. I'm very excited to finish it. I haven't really played it at night because I do get a little, I don't know, I'm just a weenie. I'm a wuss. But overall, it's incredible. I understand why people love it. I love it. I'm very excited to keep playing. I don't know really any story spoilers. As much as I've heard this game talked about, most people like keep it pretty in check. Everyone loves to talk about the opening sequence and the where's everybody going bingo line.
Yeah.
But outside of that, it's like I don't really know anything, and that's exciting for a game that's been out for so long is still pretty under wraps for me.
I can't remember there being like huge twists or something like that, but you know, it is one of those things where like I feel more invested in some of the like direction of some of these characters, like seeing after like having some of the story between Leon and Ada, for instance, from RE2, I'm interested, like I am interested in seeing how like when they meet up, how that like plays out. And also like having a reminder of that. Like even if it plays out exactly the same, just being like, okay, now I have the context to be able to get like where their relationship is coming from here. And so like that across the board, like, you know, I'm getting more invested in this overarching kind of tale, if you will. And it helps to also inform, you know, this, some of the newer games with Ethan Winters, where, you know, having characters like Chris Redfield and other people pop up, like getting that connection, getting the understanding of where all of that kind of fits in together. So yeah, I don't know. I bought into it just to be a part of the conversation. I was like, well, if I don't do it now, maybe a while before I play it. So I might as well do it when it's fresh and everybody's talking about it. But I'm excited to dive in, and especially too, I mean, just having left RE2 Remake and being like, man, I had a great time with this. I'm looking forward to diving back in. And I do remember some scary boy enemies later on in the game that like I didn't really remember until very recently. So not looking forward to that, but game in general, excited.
Yeah, I will. The enemies have made the transition from like odd villagers who are hunting you to like now like this essentially this cult who are far scarier. It's gone from villagers with like pitchforks and axes to this cult with like full scythes, maces, shields, all of that jazz. And they're not that scary. It's the chanting that really, like, really, really bothers me. That's kind of why I haven't been pushing to play it at night, because I'm like, that is just, that makes my skin crawl. But when I play it with my, you know, blinds open and there's nice bright sunshine pouring in, like I can feel heat on my skin, it's not as bad. I will. This game is very antithesis to our show of Arcade Cozy. This is very not cozy.
To somebody, this might be cozy.
But. Somebody it might be. But also, I thought, I'm like, okay, if this is where we're at now, we're at the halfway mark, I know it's only going to get worse. I know there's something else around the corner. But yeah, the chanting is very not fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Love it.
There is something else around the corner. So great. Look forward to it. Yeah. Wonderful. Just walk, don't run around every corner.
Literally. Yeah. I have heard there's like in the later part of the game, like a very intense, like almost like pure horror section of it. I'm like,
yeah,
that doesn't sound fun.
Okay. Yeah. 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 Got to do what you got to do though, Corey. Mm-hmm. Got to see that. Got to see Leon off into the sunset. The only other thing that I've been playing since we last recorded, I had mentioned that I started it, but have now finished it. I played a Dredge, the indie debut game by, I think they're called Black Salt Games. But it is, it's also kind of in the creepy vein where you are a fisherman who washes up on a town or on an island town, and effectively, like, they kind of like give you a boat that you pay off, and you kind of get embroiled into this big kind of overarching mystery of things. And it's very like Lovecraftian in the like what lurks beneath kind of way of there's something dark slithering, and there's a, you know, there are a lot of those terms of slithering and undulating and like all of these very, you know, creepy, slimy words. And there's just a whole tone to it. But there's not like the, and I think I kind of mentioned it somewhat whenever I brought it up last week, having just started it, but it's like the game doesn't have a ton of story. Like it is telling a story. Like there is a very clear through line of like what has happened and what is the purpose, but it is left explicitly vague, and it's more about kind of the atmosphere of it. And it kind of poses itself as being kind of a cozy game in a way, right, where it's like trying to, you're there more for the experience and the vibe of just like, I'm going fishing and I'm just rolling around. And yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily the calmest thing because, like, you know, you're out on the ocean for too long and then all of a sudden, like, hey, there's a ship off in the distance. I'm going to go see that. Oh shit. It's actually some giant snarl-toothed fish who's like making me hallucinate and thinking that he's a ship and is now attacking me or something. Like, you know, it's not, there's plenty of that stuff, and there's plenty of the whole, like, you know, there's a panic meter effectively that's kind of setting in where as the fisherman becomes more panicked, he starts seeing things and things right. become worse, and things actually happen where, like, you're super panicked. All of a sudden this like big tentacle comes up out of the water, and it's like, well, did that really happen? Or was I just so out of my gourd that like, I think that happened? And you know, you're going around. So that is one of the big things that I would say, like, for anybody playing it, is that it took me a while to start kind of appreciating some of these things because I didn't really, because they're like kind of five big island groups in the game. And you start out in the central one. And my thinking was that you were supposed to kind of always home base around that central location and then kind of pivot. And I never felt like the world was opening up until I really just left that center area. Because I would keep like going out a little bit, but then I'd be trying to make it back before night, or I'd get like my cargo would get too full, so I'd be having to haul back, and I'd be making these trips back to the central location over and over. And it wasn't until it was like, okay, I have to go out to one of these other island segments, but I don't have enough time to make it back before night. I'm just gonna have to settle down here. I'm gonna have to make it a point to like stay here. That then it became, oh, the world has opened up. I'm actually like seeing, hear these other people, hear these other stories that are coming out. And each of these island segments have their own thing. Like, you know, they have their own, okay, there is a massive, like, in the middle of the ocean, or in the middle of this bay of the island, like groups, there's this big, like massive maw of teeth that's just like, you swim over and it's gonna like pull you down. Or there's this island segment that's mostly kind of like swamplands and trees, and they're like these essentially like mind flayers who are like playing tricks on your mind and like luring you off into these directions. Like there's all this lore of kind of like what is happening here that's kind of feeding into this bigger overarching narrative. And you're finding these notes from a married couple who have like been on their honeymoon and are going through it. Like they start off very happy and then it's like, oh no, like here's all this stuff happening that plays into this overall narrative that it's trying to tell. And it's just like, it is a very like specific game, you know, because you are sailing around, you have to enjoy the inventory management of it. Right, yeah. The exploration of it. Okay. Because there aren't like, there's some stuff I ended up kind of lucking into the quote unquote good ending.
Nice.
By way of just like, I happened to be exploring and found this NPC who kind of led me down the path of getting there. But there was no indication. There was no reason for me to go to the place that he was. It just happened out that way. I happened to be like exploring, trying to be like, man, I could really use some wood to upgrade my hull. Let me see if I can find some over here. And you have to kind of like have that mindset of like, I'm gonna explore. I'm going to like, there's going to be some stress in the sense of how I'm going to have to navigate this weird. I'm going to have to bounce over here. I'm going to have to like, you know, weave through these rocks and like face this panic and do these things. Like there's an element to that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an element to like, you know, you don't have a weapon. You can't fight back. You can't do, you're at the mercy of what's happening in the sea and you're having to kind of just navigate in response to it. But it is a very, like, I think it's, I'm always very fascinated with those kind of stories of like, especially the Eldritch stuff that dips into it, that doesn't like go full cosmic horror, but just has the hints of like, there's something sinister here. And all of the characters have that, you know, they're all of them have those hints of like, they've been changed by this somewhat. And they've seen some stuff and they need some help. But I'm not the person. So
yeah, I'm not that guy.
I'm just gonna talk to you for a second and move on. But yeah, I mean, it's longer. It's a little bit longer than you would think. Like it's, I think about 10-ish hours.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's super fun, super interesting. I love the vibe. I love the, you know, I'm also kind of like a, I mean, it comes back to RE4 remake. Like one of the things people love about RE4 is the inventory management, like the Tetris style of things.
Yep.
It has that. It's very on top of that. Even to more of an extent where it's like you customize what engines you have and what nets and rods you have and what lights you have. And sometimes like, even if you have the same arrangement, if you arrange them differently, where it's like, okay, I'm going to put this engine here instead of here, now I can fit more into my hole, like that kind of stuff. Okay. There is something to kind of like playing with some of those things. So if you enjoy that, that's also a plus. But yeah, Dredge, fun stuff.
Where are you playing it at? On what console?
I played it on PlayStation. It is also on Switch.
Okay.
So,
what do you think, it fits more PlayStation or Switch vibe?
I got it. I think it is plenty. It is very like a Switch vibe kind of thing. I just like in my head, I was like, I kind of want to play this on the TV. Like it's more kind of like it doesn't. I've listened to some podcasts and stuff while I've been playing it, so it isn't like integral that it's like I can't be watching TV while I'm doing this. But I think it was just a choice. I don't think it's like, I don't know how it runs on Switch. That being said, like, I haven't really looked at it, but it is on Switch. It's probably just fine on Switch. So
okay, no, you've talked it up enough to where I'm like, okay, this is a game bite size, which is what we'd love to see that I want to play. And so I'm like, okay, after I wrap up RE4, maybe I'm still in this little bit of a spooky, creepy mood. Also, I have all the time in the world. I'm sure I could beat it in like a day here in the near future. So I think I'm going to pick it up. And who knows? You might be hearing more about Dredge.
Yeah. You should also play, now that I think about it, did you ever play Prey?
No, you've talked about Prey a lot though, and you liked it.
Yeah, you should play Prey because that's also like it is. It's in that realm of it's. There can be moments that are tense and scary, but it isn't a scary game. But it is really interesting, and in my personal opinion, I like it a good bit. It may be worth checking out at some point, because it is pretty cool. So, yeah,
we'll see. I mean, my current list right now during my recovery is finish RE4, which I might do before surgery. Finish Persona 4 Golden, which I've made it to the next palace, or dungeon, whatever you want to call it. And then basically get through more Octopath and continue my Legend of Zelda project. So any recommendations that you have? Dredge has moved its way into the list of what I might play. But if you or anyone else has any recommendations of what to check out, send it my way. I'm happy to check it out. This includes all movies, books, TV shows.
Speaking of, I mean, we're running long. I don't want to delve into it too much, but I did finally watch both Everywhere, Everything, All the Time, Everywhere. Ooh, and nice. Also Glass Onion. Both of them.
Yeah.
Very much enjoyed both. Glass Onion, you know, liked a lot, still prefer Knives Out, but had a great time. I'm in it, though. You know, really, I love whodunits. It's just kind of...
They're so good.
It's my vibe. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once was really good and was a lot more like profound than I thought it was going to be. I can't say like, oh yeah, I know it deserved Best Picture because I haven't seen any of the other Best Picture nominees. I can't say, but like it is a lot more like it is a lot deeper. And again, more profound than it kind of feels like it should be, just dealing with like generational trauma and dealing with like a lot of these like heavy, deep subjects. There's, and also this like, this almost kind of like FOMO vibe-ness of like being so checked out of things.
Okay.
Yeah. In the like, you know, in the hope that something better will come along. There's just like, there's a lot of really neat stuff. It's shot beautifully. All of the, like the entire concept was wonderful. So I loved it. Had a great time. Super good. And I like it being the only Best Picture nod that I've seen. I would vote for it.
Fair.
Best Picture. Nice.
Yeah, I'm probably going to watch that too over my recovery window. And you'll hear all about it too, I'm sure. I did pick up Mistborn finally, and I've been reading that. I know we talked about that last week off the air, but reading that now.
Love it.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, Corey,
I think it's been an episode.
Yeah. Next week.
More RE4 remake.
More RE4 remake, probably.
Mario.
I may pick up, I may start on some other something. I don't know. I started like flail buying a couple of 3DS games now that the 3DS eShop is down. Not even just digital. Like, I bought a physical copy of both Samus Returns and Fire Emblem Conquest.
Yeah, you did.
Snaps. Because in my mind, I was like, I want to get these before they go up in price.
Before they are $700?
Yeah. Not necessarily that they will, but the likelihood that there's a higher chance that they will be now.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows? Who knows what I'll be playing? Probably, I would like to play a little bit of Zelda before Tears of the Kingdom, so maybe a little bit of that. But yeah, Corey, where can people find you on the internet if they want to find you?
People can find me on the internet over on Instagram at @slingingthrasher. I will 100% post a picture of my knee. So if you don't want to see that, don't follow me. But if you're curious, come check it out. Follow me over on Twitter at @StayThrashy. But most importantly, follow our Twitter account, @arcade_cozy, which again had been a bit more active there. So come on.
Love it. You can find me at 4pointpixel on Instagram. I'm slowly getting back into the motions of things. I've been checked out just on most social media for a while with the new job and with house stuff. It's so busy. I needed a little bit of a break, but I'm pulling back in, trying to post some there. So if you want to see it, it's there. arcadecozy@gmail.com is our email. Email us comments, concerns, questions. Curious
hello, strangers.
Hello, strangers. That's what I say all the time. John would be good. 89. Intro music, outro music. Shout out to him too. I don't even know that he listens. He got a Moog partnership, which is kind of cool.
Snaps to
considering the fact that like I mean Moog is just I mean Moog like all of the intro and outro music you've heard has been on a Moog to the best of my knowledge. So nice. The fact that he's getting to work with that company is super cool. Shout out to him. Corey, this has been an episode. Until next week, this has been Arcade Cozy. Life's Hectic. Why should your eyes be too?
Where's everybody going? Bingo.
Oh, no.